everybody. Welcome to the 100th episode of The Comic Source. I'm Jace.
I'm Jaden.
And this is Manny.
Can you guys believe we're on 100 episodes already?
No, it doesn't seem like it's been that long.
Definitely not.
Yeah. I wonder how much we've improved. I mean, obviously our numbers have improved since the first episode. You know, we're getting more downloads now. Obviously, when we have creators on and interviews, those seem to be the most downloaded episodes, the one all you listeners seem to enjoy the most. But yeah, we're definitely growing, so it's pretty cool. It's kind of makes me wonder where we'll be in another 100 episodes. So before we get started, the Phoenix Comic Con is coming up the first weekend in June. Jaden's going to be heading down to Phoenix from Vegas to attend the show with me. And Manny was invited, but I never did hear back. I assume since it's a late in the game now that you're not going to make it.
No, I wish I could make it. I just have way too many things going on out here.
All right, fair enough. There's going to be a lot of good guests there, so definitely looking forward to it. Art Adams, Mark Brooks is going to be there, Jaden.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I have no idea what he'll be charging for commissions, you know, because he charges a hefty penny, but you know, that's at San Diego, where obviously the demand is much higher. So it'll be interesting to see if he's going to be charging. I mean, I imagine he'll be charging less than he does at San Diego's, but I mean, regardless, it'll be really cool to see him. Barry Kitson's going to be there. Let's see who else. Dan Jurgens is going to be there. Looking forward to seeing him. Chad Harden. Yeah, just a lot of really, really good quality guests. And, of course, as far as publishers go, Valiant is going to be there. David Barron. I'm not sure who else from Valiant is going to be there. So, also, George Perez. Looking forward to talking to Heath Corson. Jamal Igel is going to be there. DC's going to... They don't have a booth, but they're sending Jason Inman, who is a co-host of the DC All Access, and they're having a big Rebirth panel. Obviously, Rebirth is all the rage right now. We're going to be talking about that in a little bit here. So that's, as far as I'm concerned, that's like one step closer to having DC come out. You know, now that they're on the West Coast, it'd be pretty easy for them to come out. So... looking forward to that. Who else is going to be there? See, Marv Wolfman, Michael Golden, Mike DeBalfo, Mike Zeck, our buddy Norm Ratman is going to be there. Todd Knock, looking forward to seeing him again, obviously, and his wife, Dawn. Ron Mars is going to be there. So, yeah, if you haven't gotten your passes, I would say go to phoenixcomiccon.com immediately before they sell out, because it usually sells out on Saturday and Friday. So it's a great show. There's a lot of other guests as far as non-comic guests. There's going to be a couple of guests from like Star Trek The Next Generation. I think Dr. Crusher is going to be there. Just it's a really good show, and it's getting bigger every year. So June 2nd through the 5th, downtown Phoenix at the Convention Center. Like I said, if you haven't gotten your badge by now, you better get on it before they sell out. Hoping to sit down with a few interviews as far as some of the media guests, not just the comic guests, but I haven't heard back. I had to fill out an application and all this paperwork and everything. I haven't heard back yet. So I requested to speak with Katie Lotz, is that how you say it?
Yep.
And Sean Astin, be cool to sit down with them. Yep. So, I guess we'll see what happens.
Pitch, got a bunny and a bear trap sound. You'll know it when it comes. Because you're the one who'll be making it.
All right, let's start off with some TV news. What do you guys want to start with? We've got three shows to discuss. What's your preference?
I think we should start with Preacher, because that's probably the least important of the three, I think.
the least important of the three. It's the only one I watched.
Yeah, well, I mean, both the other ones were... Game of Thrones was a huge bombshell, and Legends of Tomorrow just finished, so...
I see what you're saying. So, as far as...
impact for the series, yeah, I think it's probably the least impactful.
Okay. Well, let's all give our initial impressions. You start, Manny. What'd you think?
You know, I've never actually read any of the Preacher books.
You know,
so I had no idea what...
As huge of a comic fan as I am, and a fan of Garth Ennis, I've never read it either. Even though I have some friends that are huge Preacher fans and always recommended it, I've just never taken the time to sit down and read it.
So, yeah, too many things to read. So it was kind of just based on, I guess, just TV in what I watched. So. Time to watch it, and I thought it was very, very well done. But I don't have anything to compare it to, book wise. So I can't say, you know, it's so much like the comic. It's so much not like the comic. But as a show, but it was different.
Did you like it or not?
Yeah, I did.
All right. Now you haven't read it either, right, Jaden?
No.
Okay. So what are your thoughts? Did you like it?
Yeah, I really liked it. I didn't even know. I think I heard something, rumblings about this like a few months ago, and then I heard about it like Friday, Saturday before it came out, and I didn't really have any sort of, I didn't even see any trailers or anything. It's kind of rare for me to get that far with a comic-based like TV show without hearing anything about it, but I really liked it. Definitely going to be watching next week. I like the tone. I like the guy who plays... the main guy that they got.
Yeah, that plays Jesse Custer. Dominic Cooper played in Captain America the First Avenger, played Howard Stark.
Oh yeah.
The younger, not as he gets older. I think that's John Slaherty, like that played him in the most recent Captain America movie.
He reminds me of like a shorter Carl Urban.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, we're not gonna get a new episode for 2 weeks though.
Yeah, there's no episode next week. I'm not sure what that's about. Maybe because it's Memorial Day weekend?
I think it's because this was probably like an extra long episode.
Oh, could be. But, yeah, surprisingly, I've never read it. It is kind of a seminal work. It's one of those evergreen, as they're labeled or referred to, trade paperbacks in the DC Universe, meaning that it's always in print, you know, along with Watchmen and The Dark Knight Returns, because it's, you know, the trade paperbacks constantly sell.
Yeah.
I believe it was somewhere around 60 or 70 issues. Plus, I think there was like a special and a Saint of Killers, who's one of the main antagonists. He had a 4-issue miniseries. So I knew enough, even though I'd never read it, I knew enough about the original series to kind of have an idea of what was going to happen in the first episode, but it didn't go the way the beginning of the story goes. And just based on the story and the way things played out, I can see that it's not going to follow the comic. Like there's a pretty substantial change. But I think that's okay. I started out probably a third of the way into the episode, I thought, well, this isn't really going to be my thing. I'll probably just watch the first episode. But as it went, because I kind of kept waiting for the big event that happens early in the comic to happen. And so, but even as I'm watching it, I'm looking toward that happening, and as I'm slowly realizing it's not going to happen, I totally got sucked in. So yeah, I thought it was very well done. Like you, Jaden, I love Dominic Cooper. I thought he was great. You know, knowing so much about the comic, even though I never read it, I have somewhat of a different perspective from you guys. So I kind of have something more to judge it on, I guess you'd say, whereas you two just judge it basically on, you know, the premise of the show. You know, I did try to go and see the first episode at WonderCon this year, but the line was too long. I'm kind of glad I didn't get to see... because if I'd seen this way back then, I think I probably would have made time to read the Preacher series, but I still haven't, and I think I'm going to wait until I watch the whole first season. I think it's 10 episodes. I did send my buddy Dom a text message earlier today, actually, to ask him if he watched it, because he is a huge Preacher fan. Like, he's read the whole run multiple times, so I wanted to get his opinion. And so I texted him, I'm like, have you watched Preacher yet? And he immediately replied back, you have impeccable timing, with a picture of his TV. He was watching it right then as I texted him. So I was like, okay, well, let me know when you're done, you know, what you thought. And he texted me back immediately saying, well, I'm only halfway through, but I'm 100% in. Like, he loves it. So obviously the changes didn't bother him that much. And I mean, he knows the story backwards and forwards, having read it multiple times. So I'm sure he'll be coming on the show sometime in the near future to talk some Preacher. But yeah, I thought it was great. Probably my least favorite moment was the scene on the airplane, just because it was really hard to, like, I was totally lost at first, and I couldn't understand Cassidy talking. It was really hard to follow. Like, when they put Arf's face on the screen, they have the subtitles. I feel like when Cassidy's talking, he needs subtitles too. That was really, really hard to follow. So, but yeah, I thought it was really good. I haven't really seen anyone like rip it to shreds, which is kind of surprising in this day and age of the vitriol on the internet. So most people I saw respond to it on social media, the reviews were overwhelmingly positive. So yeah, I'll definitely be trying to keep up. You know, I don't have a lot of time for TV, but I think I'm definitely going to try to keep up with Preacher, and we'll certainly be following along and talking about it on the show. Anything else to add, Jaden?
No, not really. I mean, I didn't really have that much of a hard time following Cassidy, and that I didn't really understand what was going on the plane, but I thought it was kind of cool. I think that was like supposed to be like, what's going on here, until he pretty much bites that guy like a vampire.
Yeah.
And then you're kind of like, oh, okay, you can kind of make a little bit more sense out of it by that, but I don't know. I definitely really like the show. I'm definitely going to keep watching too. It's something else cool. I mean, there's not as many things on during the summer. I mean, Arrow and Flash are about to wrap up.
Any final thoughts, Manny, about Preacher?
I just thought bad timing for the premiere with such an amazing episode of Game of Thrones. It kind of, I think, got overshadowed. Which is another reason why I think they're going to do the pilot again next week. But I really liked it. I don't know what's really going on, but I thought it was done really well. That, just like Jaden, I had not really an idea of what was going on in that plane or who the character was. And then, you know, the whole action sequence happened, and I thought that was pretty cool.
You know, now that I'm sitting here thinking about it, first of all, before I get, so I know there's not a new episode next week, but they're re-airing the pilot next week?
Yeah, they're re-airing the pilot, and then they're doing like a talking Preacher thing with that one guy
Chris Hardwick.
Chris Hardwick. Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
So yeah, they're going to go into depth into it next week.
Yeah, and also...
This weekend.
Yeah, also, I mean, if you don't want to wait until it airs on AMC again, you can go and watch it on Amazon right now, for the first episode, for free. Even if you don't have
it. You can also watch it on AMC for free, the first episode.
One last thing that I thought of as you were talking about the airplane scene. I got a little bit of a Robert Rodriguez vibe, especially the scene with Tulip in the car. I don't know, did you guys, you know, look kind of grindhousey at all?
Yeah, I can see that.
I could definitely see where you're coming from. I got that feeling a lot when Cassidy was in the crater.
Oh, yeah.
That reminded me a lot of the Robert Rodriguez movie.
Yeah. Cool. All right. What's next? You guys want to talk Game of Thrones or Legends of Tomorrow? Because I'm out. I've seen neither one.
Let's just touch on Legends of Tomorrow and talk Game of Thrones last.
All right.
What did you think of the finale? I don't think we've really talked about Legends of Tomorrow that in a while either. What did you really think of like the way that they ended it, Manny?
You know, I was expecting, I understand the character they chose as the guy who comes back and warns them, but I was expecting a bigger name. I don't know about what you think, but I was kind of disappointed with who ended up being the one who comes back and warns them about the future. And with Hawkman and Hawkgirl's kind of going on their own, they were honestly my least favorite characters. So I had no problem with them taking off. I'm just very curious to see what's going to happen next, because I wasn't that big of a fan of the show. I just kind of watched it just to kind of support DC and support the TV universe. But I find myself week to week just kind of really annoyed with Rip Hunter's decisions. And this episode was no different, especially now that Leonard Snart is gone. It kind of made it a little bit harder to watch for me, myself.
Okay, so what do you think? Who was the character that came back that you thought wasn't important enough to be integral?
It was like Rex something, I think.
He's from the Legion. I guess he's from the Legion of Superheroes. Our Man?
He's from the Justice Society of America.
There you go. Sorry.
Rex Tyler.
Yeah.
Our Man.
Yeah, Our Man.
Okay, well, season 2 is Justice Society of America, from what I understand, which has a lot of people excited.
Yeah, it's just I just felt like this whole season was really vague, and I didn't like it as much as any of the other shows. Well, actually, Gotham was actually probably worse than Legends.
I wonder just how much it was. They weren't sure how well it was going to be received. They weren't sure, if they're going to get if they're going to do a second season. So I'm just wondering if maybe that, you know, still kind of a feeling out phase. You know, we've mentioned this before on the show. It's a really classic, legendary sci-fi shows that kind of struggled their first season or season and a half. I think explicitly Star Trek The Next Generation, we've mentioned how the first season and a half was, I mean, it's watchable, but it's nowhere near as good as it got. So it'll be interesting to see in the second season, just because they're changing so many of the characters.
Not that many. They're keeping most of them.
All right. Well, so even more so, if that's the case, then just to see, you know, if it improves, you know.
Yeah.
Now, did the
three and a half?
Did they actually defeat Vandal Savage, or I mean, is he still gonna?
Yeah.
He's gone.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to have both of the Hawkman, Hawkgirl are gone, and also Captain Cold.
Yep.
And Captain Cold was my favorite character out there.
But it's still going to be time travel, right? So they technically could bring back anybody at any point.
Yeah, but they're not going to.
Yeah, Rip Hunter actually, he takes Heat Wave to a point back right before or sometime before they go out, and he lets him have a conversation with Leonard in a bar, and he kind of ends up having a really emotional moment, and then he just takes off, and then when they're leaving Rip tells him that he can bring him back to this time anytime he wants. So that I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, it's a comic book show, so no one's ever really dead.
I wonder. Yeah, it's true, but there's no reason for them to kill somebody off in the show if they're not going to leave. They're not going to take them off the show.
Well, emotional impact or whatever. I mean, maybe it's the fact that what's his name? Dominic Purcell. That's Heatwave. Wentworth Miller. They're reviving Prison Break, so maybe he wanted to go do that instead.
I could see that.
I don't know. I mean. He was, like I said, I said this on the show before, he was the reason that, like, the dynamic between Wentworth Miller and Dominic Purcell, you know, having the relationship between the two actors, having been on Prison Break for so long together, I feel like their chemistry was really cool, really good. Cool, no pun intended. But that was a selling point for me to actually want to watch the show. So
he ended up developing also really good chemistry with Katie Lutz.
So I think he's a good actor, so. Anyway, so, I mean, you said you just watched it, Manny.
My bad. Yeah.
To kind of support DC. Are you? I mean, you plan on tuning in for season two?
Well, yeah, because you guys make a lot of good points about second seasons. Like, for example, Arrow, second season was a whole lot better. And then some other shows. So I think they're going to tweak it some. And I think it'll be better. But we'll see. Whatever happens. Jaden kept getting cut off with his thoughts.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Go ahead, Jaden.
All right. Well, I didn't watch the last three episodes until last night. So that kind of can tell you how much I really have cared about the show. I kind of just stopped watching because it's just... It's not a show where I'm just going to sit down and watch it by itself. I'm usually just going to do something while I'm watching it, or I'll be on my phone or something. It just doesn't really capture my attention as much as pretty much any other of the DC shows. But I didn't mind the way that they ended it. I kind of started to like Rip a little bit more than I did at the beginning of the season. I do think it's funny, though, that now that the big bad Vandal Savage is gone, that the Hawkman and Hawkgirl are gone, it's just kind of funny to me that the main reason that they were even all coming together to, like, save everybody from Vandal Savage, like, one of the main reasons is to save Hawkman and Hawkgirl, and as soon as that's done, they're the ones that are leaving. They're like, ah, yeah, we're good now. Later. But, I mean, it was decent. The thing about second seasons, I feel like, is that at this point, I feel like this far into the show, I feel like it should get legs. Like, even at the end of, like, the end of the first season of Arrow, I feel like at least they got more comfortable in, like, their characters, and they found who their characters were more. And I don't really feel like that has happened that much in this show. So, I think I'm gonna still keep watching, and I'll see what the second season is, but... I don't really expect it to be much. I mean, I would give the show probably about a 6 out of 10, and I think that that's about what I would expect it to continue being.
Yeah, I wonder if, I mean, just from hearing you guys talk, you know, in the comics, Rip Hunter was always such a really cool and interesting character, and it kind of feels like, and I've heard other people make this complaint about him not really being that likable, and him being kind of like the reason the team came together and whatever, and the Time Lords and whatever, and if they didn't get that right, it seems like that's such, like, a core part of the show that it's hard to be invested or to really, like, root for the good guys if they got him wrong, you know, and you're constantly, like, questioning his decisions and, you know, it's just kind of bothersome if he's annoying or whatever. It just kind of taints the whole show, you know what I mean? You think that's there's some truth to that?
Definitely. And I don't really think it's... I don't mind the actor, actually. I think the actor's doing... I think it's just his writing. I don't know if the writers really have a good grasp on how I think he should be.
All right. How about Game of Thrones? The internet kind of exploded on Sunday night with this one.
If anybody doesn't want to hear any, like, super big spoilers, you probably want to skip forward probably, like, 5-10 minutes, something like that. But Game of Thrones Sunday was huge. It was probably the most emotionally impactful episode of the entire show, for me at least. I don't think we should start with the big part of it yet. I think we should maybe talk about... I'm happy that Jon Snow and Sansa are, like, finally two Starks came together again. Like, it's pretty cool. That was a pretty cool moment, seeing them come together, because it's been since, I don't even know, like, the second season since we've seen Starks together, or maybe even the Red Wedding. it's pretty cool. I like that. I'm hoping that they can get a pretty good army going together, so they can go and fight and take Winterfell. I think that would be great. What do you think? What do you think of that, Manny?
Oh, well, things are starting to finally come together. You got from different points where everybody's gone on their journey. And I think now with the next few episodes coming up, we're going to start seeing some major moves. We saw that the queen, the queen's mom, what's her name? Oh, I'm so bad with names. I cannot believe it. Queen, no, it's not. Cersei, is that her name?
Cersei Lannister?
Yeah, Cersei, I think she's pretty fed up with that, with the religion taking over her kingdom. Well, I call it her kingdom because she's always run things in the back, I think. And we saw a little bit in the preview that they're going to make some moves there. And then also we have Khaleesi after last week's big ending with her taking out the figures in the tent. Yeah, and now she's gonna come back with a huge army. To be honest with you, I really find it interesting, Tinian over at her castle, just trying to hold things together, how he's trying to have all these political moves, because I think he knows, because he's been the smartest character throughout the series, that Khaleesi is going to come back, and when she does come back, she's going to come back stronger than ever. So he's just trying to have all these pieces kind of held together by just barely. And then once she comes back, it's gonna get real interesting.
I'm curious to how she reacts to him letting the other cities have slaves for 7 more years. She's not a person who really likes to compromise. She's a very black and white leader. It seems like something that she would not be very approving of.
I think he's going to talk his way out of it, as he usually does in most situations. So I cannot wait to have them confront each other. And I don't know, you might be right. She might totally reject everything he did and kick him out. But at this point, I don't think she would do that. I think she's getting a little bit smarter than that.
I really like Tyrion, and I'm happy that he's with, what's his name? The guy he's with.
The eunuch?
Yeah.
Yeah, what did you think of him? He tried to stand up to that witch, and then it just didn't work out for him. Trying to bash on a religion and beliefs, and then all of a sudden she pulls out memories from his past that seem to really, really touch him.
I really don't understand the people who like question all these like witches who totally just can conjure up some magic. Like, obviously it's coming from somewhere. But
yeah.
So the big thing that happened last week is Hodor died, and we found out why the only thing he can say is Hodor. And I'm sure that you've heard the hold the door thing on everything. What did you think about that, Manny? How did you interpret that whole scene with Bran back in the past with the younger Hodor?
Well, first let me start off by saying that I find it very disrespectful and very annoying. People always getting really overexcited. People wanting to break the story first or be one of the first ones to post about a certain subject. Not everybody can see Game of Thrones at the moment it comes out. Not everybody gets to see it on the East Coast time. Some of us have to wait till West Coast times. And then some people are just busy and can't watch it till maybe the next day, and so on. And just a quick shout out to not posting spoilers for people. You know, let others be as excited as you were to find out certain reveals, because as many people were posting about the Game of Thrones episode, there were also that many people posting about how so many people had spoiled the ending for them. And come on, just give everybody the chance to watch the show and enjoy it just like you did, because at the end of the day, you don't want anything spoiled either. So just hold off your enthusiasm. Yeah, it's okay to talk about the show and how great it was, but don't give it away. Let others enjoy it. I don't know how much social media you saw on Sunday night, or you guys both, but it was just for every tweet or Facebook post that I saw that talking about Game of Thrones, I saw one or two talking about spoilers and how mad some people were. Did you guys notice that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I could definitely see where that would happen. I personally, if I don't watch Game of Thrones, I don't go on social media until after I watch it, even if it's a couple days, because I just know how many people watch it. It's kind of the same thing. I did the same thing with Breaking Bad.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, definitely. I think spoilers are big, like, no. I hate people. I hate when people spoil stuff. I did see somebody tweet before I watched it on Sunday, Hold the Door, and I was very confused about why this person was tweeting Hold the Door, but then I found out there within an hour. I was very, like, I did not think that the most affecting death in all of Game of Thrones, at least to this point, would be Hodor for me. Like, just the fact that Bran was back in the, like, I think it's more, personally, I think it's more time travel than going back and seeing, like, things that have happened, because it can actually affect things that happen there. And I just, like, it was sad to me, because not only did Hodor die, but he was also, basically, his entire life was for that moment. Like, he put that one task in his head so young, and for the rest of his life, he was Hodor, because his main job up until that point, in his life at least, was to hold that door and to keep those White Walkers from getting through. I just thought that was just, it was so tragic.
Yeah, you know, I kind of have the same feeling you did. And especially the way they ended that episode with not Hodor dying, but the young Hodor reciting "Hold the Door" all the way to Hodor. It gave me chills a little bit for that same reason. I guess just realizing how innocent he was in that whole situation, to know that so many years in the future, this was his purpose, to literally hold the door. And I haven't had that kind of a reaction to an ending of Game of Thrones since probably the Red Wedding. And it's strange too, because you would think it'd be a bigger character or a bigger moment, but it was Hodor out of all these other characters that something could have happened to, or something impactful. The death of Hodor is probably going to go down as one of the biggest moments in Game of Thrones, because you learn so much about him, and he doesn't, and that he just says those words, "Hold the door," and it's going to save his life. And who knows what kind of impactful things he's gonna go on to do in the near future, in the next few episodes. But yeah, we were talking about it at work with a couple of guys who watched the show. That it's strange that his character. You know if I would tell you a season or two back that his character, you know, you're gonna. It's gonna make you emotional. Everybody would probably just laugh, because there's not much to it then. But in just a matter of a few episodes, it changes. I mean, you start thinking about how much he sacrificed and how much he had to carry Renan everywhere and whatnot. So yeah, it was a very impactful ending, and I just love the way they did it. And now it's time to move on, I guess. see what's going to happen next time.
I'm loving this season. It's great. I think it's the best season so far.
Yeah, definitely. Well, a lot of pieces are starting to come together, like I was saying earlier. And yeah, I am right with you. It is very nice to see Starks together again. Now, I would really want to see a little bit more on what the hell is going on with Arya. Because some of her story still has a little bit confused as to what the hell's going on.
She just needs to graduate from the Many Faces Gods high school, and then once she gets her diploma, she's going to say, "Peace out, let me take one of some of these faces, and I'm going to go help save Winterfell." That's my prediction, at least.
I just can't wait till they all come together, because they all have to come together, right?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a little bit, though. I mean, I think we have this season, and they said something about having two shorter seasons after this to wrap everything up.
Yeah, they said it was almost done, so... yeah, there's a lot of stuff definitely going on. I'm loving it.
So, I know nothing about Game of Thrones. Something to do with time travel, and the guy named himself Hodor because he needed to hold the door. So he went back, traveled back in time, and told his younger self, at this moment, hold the door and you're going to die doing it, but it's very important. Something like that.
It's funny.
Am I even close?
Your point of view is definitely different from ours. I can see where you're coming from.
All right.
I think that Game of Thrones is the calculus of TV shows. If you miss one day, you are forever lost for the rest of the entire series. Like, if you ever didn't watch one episode of Game of Thrones, you would be completely lost for the rest of the series. Every episode has so many story points that it's just like, we couldn't even catch you up if we wanted to.
it took me, I caught up to it when it was, I think, in the fourth season, and it was work to get there. I was in a comic book shop in Oakland, and they had a statue or something. And I was like, oh, that's a very interesting show. I've heard a lot of people talk about it, and they're like, give it a shot. And, oh, man, once they ended the first season with the death of Ned Stark, I was like, wait, they can't do that. He's a main character. They can't kill him. And that just sucked me in right there. Because at that point, I knew that this was going to be a wild ride, and I wanted to be a part of it.
Well, I remember when Jaden first started to watch, I guess a bunch of his friends had watched it, and we were talking about it. And I don't even know how many episodes were out at that point. Maybe the whole first season was done or whatever. But I remember he was at our place in California, and he downloaded it. At least the first episode, and three or four nights in a row, he tried to watch it and fell asleep. I was paying no attention whatsoever, you know, because I don't really watch TV. But you remember that, Jaden?
Yeah, I do remember that. It's because the first half of the first season, I would say, is just so much exposition, because you have like
learn who all the
15,000 characters that you have to learn about and get a bunch of background information about. So Game of Thrones is not. Of all the shows that I've ever watched, it's probably it didn't start off great, not because of writing or anything, but just because it's so hard to introduce somebody to like 20 characters and have you care about them immediately. But I started when it was about halfway through the second season, and like I envy all the people that were like, oh, I started the fourth season, like you, Manny. Like I've been waiting week to week for Game of Thrones for like 4 years now.
Now the show's ahead of the books now, right?
Yep, this final episode put the final storyline in front of the books. I think that Arya's was the one that was the furthest along, and I think this last episode put her right where she's left off in the books, I believe.
Because I know there's people at my work that are huge Game of Thrones fans. Some of them had read the book, were huge fans of the books. Like before the show ever, you know, aired.
Yeah.
And I guess there's even more characters in the books. And then the one guy who's a huge fan, read all the books, whatever, has been loaning his books to other people who, you know, became fans because of the TV show. So either one of you guys plan on reading the books at any point?
After the show's over.
Like I have time.
All right.
You just started a war.
Well, let's talk some movie news. Did you guys see that Marvel has added more characters? Well, not added more characters. They probably revealed more of the characters that are going to be in Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah, I saw the article you put in. I'm very excited to see Jeff Goldblum and Carl Urban. That's pretty cool to me. I mean, Kate Blanchett's all right. I don't really mind her. I think she's probably going to be mostly CGI, so it's probably not going to be much of her actually acting.
I don't, but, you know, Kate Blanchett is a, you know, she's an okay actress, but she, like, I feel like her perfect role was when she was in Lord of the Rings. She was like the elf goddess or whatever. And I felt like that was like her perfect role, because she's very, like, aloof, and, you know, kind of mysterious and, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
doesn't see, kind of emotionless, I guess is the word I'm looking for. And, so I don't know that I can see her as Hela, who's like, you know, this goddess of death, because she just doesn't seem to have like much emotion, and, you know, and Hela is very like kind of angry and whatever. So it'll be interesting to see if she's able to like translate that. I think it's cool that Mark Ruffalo is going to reprise his role as the Hulk, Bruce Banner. I still, for me personally, think that Edward Norton is my favorite Hulk. I think that movie, the Hulk movie with Edward Norton, is very underrated. And I wish he'd continued. Now, I'm going to say this as Jeff Goldblum is like one of my favorite actors, if not my favorite actor, which is kind of weird, because, you know, not a lot of people pick Jeff Goldblum. You know, he doesn't do that many movies anymore or whatever, but especially his role in the first Independence Day. I love Jeff Goldblum in that movie. But he kind of plays the same kind of quirky character like all the time, and so I don't know that I see him as the Grandmaster, who's kind of this cerebral, manipulative, you know, because Goldblum does that thing where he, you know, kind of stutters and he seems just kind of like weird, mentally challenged kind of guy. So interested to see that as well. Love Carl Urban. I think he's a great pick to play the Executioner. So I still haven't seen Thor Dark World, but as anyone who's listened to our Captain America Civil War episode knows, I'm very much sucked into the Marvel Cinematic Universe at this point. I'm going to be watching everything soon and getting all caught up. So what did you think, Manny, about these revelations?
I'm not really into the Thor movies, so it was kind of like whatever.
Eh, all right. What about the news about the Black Panther casting? Now, I know that we all thought that the Black Panther was one of the best things about Captain America Civil War. And of course, we don't actually know any of the actors who are in any specific roles, but based on this casting call, you know, you can kind of make educated guesses about, you know, who's going to be doing what. So
we know that Andy Serkis is going to be Claw.
Well, yeah.
Be excited about that.
Yeah. Because he's actually already appeared.
Yeah.
And there's somebody else on the list, right, who's already appeared?
Oh, Martin Freeman.
Oh, yeah, because he was already Everett K. Ross, who, if anyone who is a fan of Christopher Priest, the legendary Marvel Knights run on Black Panther done by Christopher Priest that introduced Everett K. Ross to the Marvel Universe. Before we go any further, let me just throw a plug in for another podcast, Comic Geek Speak. If you've never listened to Comic Geek Speak and you're listening to our show, what the heck are you doing, first of all? Second of all, these guys at one point were putting out 5 shows a week, incredibly prolific, really fun group of guys. It's like hanging out at your local comic shop, guys just sitting around talking comics. They recently did a 3+ hour spotlight episode on the Black Panther. So if you don't know much about the Black Panther, but you saw him, you were introduced to him in Captain America Civil War, and you want to know more, go to comicgeekspeak.com and listen to their spotlight on Black Panther. It's amazing. So yeah, Everett K. Ross is discussed in that spotlight about kind of being the reader's viewpoint into the world of the Black Panther. So I'm not really that familiar with Martin Freeman. Jaden, I know you really liked him as Watson, right? In
yep.
The Sherlock Holmes. And then I know he's been in some other movies. It's been mentioned before. This is the first time I ever remember seeing him in anything. So I've never read the Black Panther run by Christopher Priest. So I can't really say. To me, he was just kind of there in Captain America Civil War. I didn't really have an opinion on him one way or the other. But yeah, Ulysses Klaue, who is definitely a villain familiar to the Black Panther from the comics, played, as Jaden said, by Andy Serkis, which I'm really happy for Andy Serkis because, you know, this guy gets like all this praise for doing this incredible acting with motion capture. You know, he played Gollum in Lord of the Rings, but he, most of the time it's never like him, you know, like you wouldn't recognize him like you'd recognize Will Smith. You know what I'm saying? Or yeah. John Travolta or Sandra Bullock or some other really famous, you know, actor. You just wouldn't, because he always plays these CGI people. I mean, great actor, but so it's kind of cool that in Age of Ultron, it was actually him on the screen. And so I wonder how much he's going to be on the screen and how much it's going to be motion capture and such for Black Panther. But let me just go down the casting call roles real fast for Black Panther. So Ulysses Klaue, we know Andy Serkis. Monica Lin, who is a singer who saved T'Challa from drowning after being bested by Killmonger, his longest love interest, whom he pledged eternal devotion towards. So clearly it's some plot points given away there. Monica Lin has been a character in the Black Panther comics for a long time. We know that Lupita Nyong'o has joined the cast, so people are speculating that that's who will be playing Monica Lin, but again, we don't know that for sure. Everett K. Ross, again, we know Martin Freeman. Nagasi, who's an advisor to T'Challa, acting regent when he goes away on missions. Obviously, no one attached to that role yet. Okoye, one of the former Dora Milaje. These are kind of like bodyguards of T'Challa. And it's much more involved than that, but go listen to the Spotlight if you want to know more details. So I imagine this is the same bald woman we saw in Captain America: Civil War. Queen Divine Justice, who's a street smart queen of the Jaban tribe of Wakanda, raised in Chicago, and she's a former Dora Milaje herself. So no rumors on casting for that. We have Wakabi, who's T'Challa's second in command. We have Zuri, a grumpy, gigantic, elderly warrior, a close friend of the late T'Chaka, who was T'Challa's father, and one of T'Challa's most trusted advisors. Then we have Achebe, slash Reverend Achebe, a poor farmer somewhere in South Africa. Achebe sold his soul to the demon Mephisto. He's portrayed as a grinning, unpredictable lunatic, warrior mystic, regularly talking to his hand puppet, Doki, with delusions as truly alive, and engineering complex plots of social unrest for profit and entertainment. So, no rumors on casting for that. Obviously, it'll be someone older. Then we have Eric Killmonger, who, again, a very well-known name to fans of the Black Panther from the comic. A powerful warrior, strategic genius in politics and economics. If in the comics you can look at Black Panther as someone who wants to bring Wakanda into the world, then you can think of Eric Killmonger as kind of the other side of the coin. He believes in the sanctity of Wakanda as a nation and wants to keep its borders closed and do what's best for the Wakandan people, which he feels is keeping it isolated. So I thought perhaps when I first heard Michael B. Jordan that he would be playing Eric Killmonger. That's the first thought I had, because I did not know that Manape is going to be in the movie as one of the villains. So it's basically a Jabari tribe, the ruler of that tribe. They're recognized as a micronation within Wakanda's borders. For those of you not familiar with the comics, Wakanda is an African nation. It's basically composed of a bunch of tribes. And the tribe that the Black Panther is a member of, he's not just the president and king of Wakanda. He is the chieftain of that tribe, and it's the most prominent tribe, the ruling tribe of the entire nation. So the other tribe that is perhaps the most powerful is the Jabari tribe, as I mentioned, and Manape or Mabaku, Wakanda's greatest warrior, second only to the Black Panther, plotted to usurp the throne with the help of the outlawed White Gorilla cult, who are ancient rivals of the Black Panther cult, which basically made them heretics since Panther worship is a state religion. So I don't I mean, just based on the visuals of Manape from the comics, I don't see Michael B. Jordan as... I see him much more as an Eric Killmonger type, you know, someone who can be a very powerful warrior, but at the same time can put on a suit, can look respectable, can be a villain, not just in the sense of physically, but mentally and politically, because he can be perceived as so legitimate. And for that reason, I think he's much more suited to that role, whereas Manape is much more just like a physical presence. And as much as I love Michael B. Jordan, and he did look pretty ripped in Creed, I just don't see him as the Manape just because he doesn't have the bulk. You know, it'd be much more of a great role for someone like Dwayne Johnson. Or who else would be? Maybe Carl Weathers, the original Creed, if he wasn't quite so old. I'm trying to think of other... you know who might be good is, what's his name, Tiny Lister, Debo,
Michael Clark. I think all the people you just named would be definitely sacrificing acting for the right physical presence.
Well, you know, it's too bad that Michael Clark Duncan is not around anymore, because that guy was a huge physical presence and definitely had the acting chops.
Yeah.
And you think Dwayne Johnson, The Rock's a great actor? Come on.
No, I don't think he's a great actor.
And the final name on the list of casting is White Wolf, T'Challa's adopted elder brother, former leader of the Hatut Zarese, the espionage elite police of Wakanda. Exiled by T'Challa due to using torture and assassinations in his zeal to root out potential threats to national security. So again, someone who doesn't necessarily agree with T'Challa's choices in ruling the nation, is loyal to the throne, if not loyal to his own brother. So when you guys, well, let me start with you, Manny. When you saw this list, did it make you more excited for the Black Panther movie or less excited because you realize how little you actually know about the character?
I was actually trying to catch up on Comic Geek Speak. I got to about maybe an hour of the
spotlight.
Spotlight on Black Panther, but I'm already excited over this movie. I love the director, actor's pretty good, and then if you're gonna add Michael B. Jordan to it, that just makes it even better. So, and then just the way the character was portrayed in Civil War, I think that it's gonna be a slam dunk. So, mainly because just how much I like the guy who's directing it. So. Seeing the list, the cast list, it just makes it that much better because there's quite a few good names. Excuse me. There's quite a few good names on there.
All right. You have any other thoughts, Jaden?
No, not really. I'm really excited for the movie. I've pretty much liked all the Marvel movies so far. So I'm excited to see, so many good actors come into this movie. I don't really care what Michael B. Jordan does, because I know that they're going to pick a pretty good role for him. Or even if he is Manape, I think it'll be like a different version.
Yeah.
So.
It's just, I mean, like, I think Michael B. Jordan would have been a great choice for Black Panther, for T'Challa. Not that the choice they made is bad by any means. Michael B. Jordan's much more lithe, much more, you know, and if it was just a different take on the villain, I'd totally be okay with that. But the fact that the villain's name is Manape, I mean, it's right there in the title that it needs to be someone who's, you know, kind of got a more physical presence. So, but I think he'd be an amazing Eric Killmonger. So I guess we'll see. Next bit of movie news. Captain America: Civil War has passed $1 billion worldwide. So no surprise there. And it did it in much shorter time than Batman versus Superman, which I actually think hasn't even quite reached. It's kind of stalled somewhere around 850 or 900 million. So again, it just goes to show that when it comes to the Marvel Cinematic, or comes to movies, the Marvel Cinematic Universe is clearly still ahead of the game when it comes to comic book movies, and certainly ahead of DC. You guys have any comments on that?
I think it just pretty much just goes to, like, I'm pretty sure that they made about the same in the opening weekend. I think Captain America might have made a little bit more. But I think just the hearsay from Captain America probably was a little better than Batman v Superman. I think that there was probably a lot of people going to their offices the next week after seeing Batman v Superman saying, eh, it was okay, or eh, I didn't really like it that much. And
yeah, or I mean, I saw Batman vs. Superman twice. I saw Captain America Civil War twice. But I think for the average person, you know, I'm a huge DC fan, but for the average person, if they've seen both, which one are they more likely to go see again? And it's probably going to be Captain America Civil War.
Plus, I think you could take a lot more different people to Captain America Civil War compared to Batman v Superman. I feel like Batman v Superman might be a bit dark for some people. Might lose some's interest.
There's a new Star Trek Beyond trailer. Now, when the first Star Trek Beyond trailer got released, there was a lot of outcry. People saying it was nothing but action. It looked just like eye candy. It was kind of losing some of the heart and soul of what made Star Trek special, which would be the characterization and the interplay of characters and the way they played off each other. This new trailer apparently answers a lot of those criticisms. So I'm not a fan at all of the J.J. Abrams relaunch of Star Trek. Now, that being said, in the interest of full disclosure, I've only seen the first one, which I just really, really disliked. But I heard the second one was a lot better. I just haven't taken the time to watch it yet. So maybe I'd feel a little bit differently if I'd seen the second one. But for me, I don't really have much interest in Star Trek movies at this point, just because I don't like the changes that J.J. Abrams has made. But I know that you guys have seen both. So, Manny, what are your thoughts on the new Star Trek Beyond trailer?
I don't really care for it. Don't really care for Star Trek. I watched the movies just because I think maybe I ran into them at Redbox one time, or maybe even just on my on-demand, but that I'm going to go out and watch a Star Trek film, that's really not going to happen.
All right, Jaden?
I really like the second one. I think people who liked the original Wrath of Khan didn't like the second one very much, because it was kind of... It's basically what J.J. Abrams did to Star Wars. He did more of a remixing of older movies, which I have no problem with. I liked the second Into Darkness a lot better than the first one. The first one was kind of just a throwaway sci-fi movie to me. It was okay. I didn't mind it. I think I've seen it twice since it came out in 2009 or whatever, so it's not anything amazing. I'm looking forward to this. I kind of wish J.J. Abrams was still directing it. It's Justin Lin, the guy who directed Fast and the Furious. I think he directed a couple of them. I like Chris Pine as Captain Kirk, and I like what's his name, the guy who plays Spock.
Carl Urban.
No, it's Silas.
Zachary Quinto.
Yeah, I really like him too. So as Spock. So I mean, I'm gonna see it. I'll probably see it in theaters. It sounds like this one's gonna be more like more true to regular. The original series, that's going to be more light. That's going to be more lighthearted and a little bit more fun, more of like exploratory. Not so much everybody's going to die and we need to save everybody from dying, which I think is going to be cool. But I think it's going to be a wait and see type thing.
All right, next bit of movie news. So this was rumored to be happening, and then it was rumored to not be happening, and now apparently it is for sure. Michael Keaton's going to be in the next Spider-Man movie, which we know is titled Spider-Man Homecoming. And apparently he's going to be the Vulture, which if anybody has seen the Vulture, Adrian Toomes is the name of the character in the Amazing Spider-Man books way back in the day. Super wrinkly, bald old man. I don't know that Michael Keaton is to the point where he's a super wrinkly, bald old man yet, but I guess he'd make a decent Vulture. And there's also some rumors, but I have a feeling that this is much more on the fans being super hopeful that Vincent D'Onofrio will also appear in the movie as the Kingpin, reprising his role from the Netflix Daredevil show. But D'Onofrio has gone on social media, Twitter specifically, and said that's not the case, but he thinks it would be really cool, and if fans want to see that, they should let Marvel know. So, what do you guys think about Michael Keaton as the Vulture? Do you see that, Manny? Can you see him playing the Vulture? I know he was in the Birdman movie.
Yeah, it's kind of funny that he would get that role as the Vulture, being that, you know, he was the Birdman. Now he's the Vulture. He's kind of getting up there in age, so I can see it. Why they would pick him. So it's nice to, it would be nice to see him back in comic book films, because I like him as an actor. I like a lot of his movies. One of my favorite Spider-Man of this. It's cool to see that he's going to get to play him, but at the same time, I'm like, it's just a Vulture.
Yeah.
We'll see, because that's gonna be a really interesting film. It's gonna be Marvel's input finally on Spider-Man. So with so many negative films, which I thought some of them were pretty good, with Spider-Man, let's see if just because Marvel has their input, regardless of what they do, the Marvel fans come out and say about how amazing this Spider-Man is going to be. Yeah,
For me personally, whatever, you know, like, Michael Keaton plays the Vulture. Yeah, he's not one of my favorite Spider-Man villains, just like you said, because I could never really understand why the heck he was dressing up like a bird and flying around in the first place. Just never made any sense to me. Like, the character never had much motivation. Maybe they'll be able to improve on that in the film. But I want to see it because I'm excited to see more of Tom Holland as Spider-Man, because that was some of my favorite parts of Civil War. Were him in that fight at the airport. They were just awesome. So
well, I guess that's why you can put a villain like the Vulture, because he's not too that interesting of a character where you're gonna want to
steal the that, show.
Yeah, so this is probably gonna be one of those really centric on Peter Parker, and so you're gonna want a villain like the Vulture where he doesn't. It's kind of secondary.
Yeah, do you have any thoughts on bringing a Marvel TV universe villain into the Marvel Cinematic Universe? I mean, we've only seen it go the other way. We've seen people from the movies like show up on Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., for example, but we've never seen it go the other way, at least not to this point.
Well, they need to, because they claim that it's a shared universe, but they're sharing what? You get a cameo from Samuel Jackson, and I think Lady...
Sif,
thank you. Had a cameo, and then they mentioned certain things here and there. I know that the last few episodes of S.H.I.E.L.D. before it ended, after the Civil War movie came out, were really heavy on the Segovia Accords, which I thought was really cool. But come on, you got to start putting some of these folks in the films. Or else stop claiming that it's a shared universe. I know that Chloe Bennett, she plays Daisy. She was saying that pretty much that's bogus. It's not a shared universe. But I would want to see some of the characters from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I'd want to see Daredevil, or at least Matt Murdock, interact with like Tony Stark or something like that. And that way, I mean, to really make it valid, that's a shared universe, you need to start putting some of these TV folks in the movies, at least as cameos.
I think the problem with that is the tone. Like, there's so much of a difference in the tone between the Marvel Netflix shows, at least, and the movies.
Yeah,
I really feel like them casting Michael Keaton as the Vulture, I think it's going to be a very lighthearted Spider-Man movie, and I think that Kingpin coming in, or at least the Kingpin from... the Marvel series would not be a very good idea, because he'd probably be smashing skulls and murdering people, and I don't think they would really want like somebody blatantly doing that. Plus, I think the Spider-Man would just beat his ass, because he doesn't really necessarily have superpowers. He just can bench press like 600 pounds.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't expect... I mean, like, maybe he funds the Vulture, or you know what I'm saying? Like, he doesn't necessarily physically fight Spider-Man. What it's interesting because I kind of agree with you, Jaden, but at the same time, Captain America Civil War, and we talked about this in our review episode, the whole entire Marvel Cinematic Universe has taken a darker turn based on what happened in that movie. At least that's how I feel.
You haven't seen the shows, though. The show, like, the first episode of Jessica Jones, at the very end of the first episode, a girl turns to her parents and murders them in an elevator.
Because Purple Man told her to?
Yeah. It's just, like, I just feel like it would have to be a cameo from, like, Daredevil or something in, like, a Civil War movie. I don't think it would be anything any further than that. But even that, like, he beats people to a pulp most of the time, so...
Well, I hope
maybe
at some point
maybe Iron Fist.
I hope at some point they can reconcile it, though, because a Daredevil Spider-Man team up or crossover, I mean, that's classic Marvel. That's classic Marvel Universe storytelling right there. So I would hope at some point that those characters could. And I mean, based on what they've done in the movies in the past, based on what they've done with Captain America Civil War, they could even make it a thing. Like, you know, Spider-Man could even. Joker, like, dude, you need to lighten up. You know what I mean?
But, I see what you're saying, but I personally think that it would be sacrificing some of the parts of both franchises that they've built separately.
Yeah.
To bring them together. Because I just really feel like the difference between, like, especially a Tom Holland Spider-Man and, like, that the Daredevil that's on the Marvel series, I just feel like it just wouldn't really, they wouldn't mesh.
Yeah, and then, yeah. Maybe it's not even so much the tone as much as the world they live in. The worlds they live in are just so different. You know, yeah. Like they're going after different things. Their goals are different. You know, like it's
yeah, but that's what I'm saying. That's why you have like Matt Murdock representing. Somebody or something like that. You don't necessarily have to have Daredevil on there.
Yeah, just, I think that would be a good idea. I think that
get the you know, get the characters in there one way or another. You don't necessarily have to have them in costume or something, but kind of prove to the world that all right, yeah, it is a shared universe.
Yeah, and it just seems to me that Netflix is going for more like gritty realism, and the Marvel Cinematic Universe is more about. The fantasy part of the superhero
selling merchandise.
Yeah. All right. Well, the next bit of movie news: X-Men Apocalypse opened overseas last weekend to the tune of $103.3 million. Now, I don't think any of us were really super excited to go and see X-Men Apocalypse. So I guess this is good news for Fox and bad news for. People that want to see all of Marvel's properties back under the Marvel umbrella. So, you have any thoughts, Jaden?
I've been very lukewarm on this movie. It hasn't really seemed that great to me from the beginning. I don't really like Apocalypse. I think it's a waste of, what's his name?
Oscar Isaac.
Oscar Isaac. I think it's a waste of him as an actor to put him under all this makeup and this huge costume and all this stuff.
Yeah, my biggest problem with the relaunched X-Men, you know, ever since with X-Men First Class, is Mystique. You know, I don't dislike Jennifer Lawrence as an actress as much as you do, Jaden, but I don't understand. There's so many great X-Men, especially on the female side. I don't understand making Jennifer Lawrence Mystique and putting her in as, like, one of the founding members of the X-Men and that having her have this huge prominent role. It's the exact opposite of what she is in the comics. And if you wanted Jennifer Lawrence to like anchor the franchise, fine, whatever. You should have made her Jean Grey. It makes no sense. And I understand these are, it's different stories and whatever, you know, it's not exactly like the comic, but it just bugs me. I can't get over it. Maybe that's just me. You have any thoughts, Manny?
You know, I thought I was excited for this, and the more I see previews and trailers and whatnot, I don't even know if I'm going to go watch it in theaters. I want to be excited for it, but I don't know. It's missing something. Maybe I think I have the same problem you do, that Mystique is leading the X-Men. And it kind of rubs me the wrong way. And then, I don't know, can't find the right vibe for it, I guess. So yeah, this might be one that I skip over.
All right. The final bit of movie news, Carl Urban still wants to play Judge Dredd. And he blames Lionsgate for bad marketing for the Judge Dredd movie he starred in. And he points to the fact that when the movie got released on DVD, it like blew up and sold like 75 million copies on DVD. And he still wants to be Judge Dredd. He thinks there's a following, and if the movie's done well, it can be a huge success. So I'm a big fan of Carl Urban. I've never actually seen the Judge Dredd movie.
Oh man, you haven't seen it? It's so good.
I've seen the Sylvester Stallone one. That was
really
not so good.
I was kind of confused because I just happened to run into it on Netflix one day. I was really bored. I turned it on. I watched it. I really liked the actor. And by the end of it, I was like, "How come I never heard of this movie? This movie's amazing." And so, I think he has a really good point. And I would love to see him in another Dredd movie.
I guess only time will tell.
We're sitting on top of the story of the century here.
Now for some comic news. There's really been a lot of news lately, especially coming from DC, almost to the chagrin of Marvel. They being Marvel, almost spoiled the end of the Captain America book that came out Wednesday, May 25th, just because, from what I understand, there were people at Marvel that were upset about just how much play and media attention DC was getting. So I'll talk about that more in a little bit. The first bit of news I want to talk about is the DC Rebirth number one that came out today as I record this, May 25th. The details leaked early. They were posted on Reddit on Friday, which had some people upset. Now, Geoff Johns had come out himself and said, stay off the internet. Don't let anyone spoil it for you. Read it for yourself. You know, I can see both sides. And in fact, CBR did a poll about whether or not things being spoiled would make you more interested or less interested in the comic. And it seemed like people were either just as interested, even though parts of it had been spoiled, or even more excited to read it. So we're going to be talking more about Rebirth and the issue itself in the next episode. We had speculated that Wally West was going to make his return. I specifically, that is a thing. If you have been anywhere on the internet, if you listen to this podcast, you probably visit comic news sites, and that's been everywhere. The other part of the story, the way Geoff Johns is explaining the existence of the New 52, I'm not going to spoil in this episode. Because as I said, today is as I record this, is May 25th, and we're going to talk about it in more detail in our next episode. So if you don't want the details to be spoiled, make sure you get out there and read it quickly, because there's going to be a lot of talk about it, I'm sure, in the next couple of days and weeks, and even longer, really, because the story apparently is going to take place, the explanation is going to be fleshed out over the next couple of years of DC Comics. I mean, it's no surprise that DC is kind of in the headlines right now, just because this is such a change. The storytelling choices Geoff Johns has made are pretty out there, but in a way it makes sense. So people are going back, they're reading some of Geoff's work for the New 52 over the last few years, and finding clues that this was coming for longer than any of us actually realized. So it's pretty interesting. I don't know if Geoff himself was doing this kind of on his own, planting these seeds to kind of get back to the legacy aspect of the DC universe, if it was editorially mandated, because then you wonder, okay, well, what about the DCU? you know, what was going on with that? Why bother? So it's pretty interesting. I don't know that we'll ever get those answers, just because of the political nature of the comic industry and being such a cottage industry. You know, and Geoff Johns is an employee of DC Comics, whose profile is definitely on the rise. So he's not going to sit back and say, oh yeah, I knew all along that the New 52 was a mistake, and so I was trying to fix it on my own. And, you know, it's just not going to happen, but you can't help but wonder. Also, along those same lines, we talked in the last episode about how Geoff Johns' profile is on the rise as far as the movie things go. He did an interview recently with Vulture, and I should mention that there's lots of links in the show notes for comic news, a lot of it to do with Geoff Johns' rebirth, so you can go and read the articles for yourself. But the Vulture.com interview, he talked about how DC Rebirth is kind of going to be the last comic he writes for a while, which I'm sure is going to sadden a lot of comic fans. He's just a super busy guy now. You know, he's got this role overseeing the DC Cinematic Universe. He talks in the Vulture article about working with people making the video games, making sure they're making the right character choices. Obviously, he's been heavily involved with the TV side of things, with getting Supergirl off the ground, with getting Flash off the ground. You know, he's a co-creator of Flash. He's written some of the episodes. So, I mean, he's stretched pretty thin at this point. But if anybody has the best interest of the DC universe at heart and wants to make sure the tone is consistent across all media, it's Geoff Johns. So I see this as a positive, but I will miss reading a monthly Geoff Johns book, you know, I'll be honest with you. And I do hope that he comes back sooner than later, because I do want to read his Aquaman story, Rise of the Seven Seas. So, as I said, there's a lot of links in the show notes, a lot of Rebirth news coming out, a lot of Geoff Johns news. He also offered Geoff Johns himself offered a money-back guarantee. If you buy DC Rebirth, don't like it, you can send it to him, contact him on Twitter or whatever, send it to him. He will reimburse you the cost of the comic as well as the postage. So there's that. There's also a link in the show notes about the return of Wally West. You can read that for yourself. There's also a link in the show notes, 10 Things You Need to Know Before You Read DC Rebirth, which is a little short video. The YouTube link is there, and it was produced by DC All Access. Kind of gets you up to date on where the DC universe is at, especially if perhaps you gave up after Flashpoint, or I know some people even before they felt the DC universe was getting too dark and they drifted away. So if you kind of want to see where things are at, what's been going on the last few years, check out that video. It's got a lot of really good information. In some other comic news not DC related, Valiant is going to be hiding original art in Exo Manowars number 47 through 50. We know that Exo Manowar is going to be ending with issue 50. We also know that Valiant was going to be polybagging those issues, 47, 48, 49, and 50, with little mini prints. Well, it turns out some of the comics aren't going to contain prints. They're going to contain original art done by Valiant artists. Some of the writers are trying their hand at putting some art in, and I even saw some pictures tweeted out by Dinesh Shamdasani, the chief creative officer as well as the chief executive officer at Valiant, trying his hand at some drawings, and those are going to be inserted as well. So I don't know. I hope I get one or two of these. It would be cool to have, but I don't know if I would prefer to have like a really cool, well-done piece of art from one of the Valiant artists, or if I'd rather have something from somebody like Dinesh or Robert Venditti, just because, while technically the art wouldn't be super great, it in a way it's much rarer. You know, these aren't people that draw on a regular basis, so it would be kind of cool and unique to have. So if you're a Valiant fan, I'm sure you're looking forward to that. If you're not a Valiant fan, maybe this is a chance for you to pick up, see what the buzz is all about, and have a chance at some original art. We do have a little bit of Marvel news. There's more titles coming, more new Marvel titles coming in autumn, more number ones, I guess. Civil War II number 3 is coming in the fall. and it's going to tell us who is going to survive and who is not going to, more specifically, who's not going to survive Civil War II. And yeah, another of those kind of preview magazines that they're going to give away for free to kind of establish the status quo, kind of get the word out about these new titles and what's going to be coming in from Marvel in the fall. So Marvel puts out a lot of books, so I hope that they can keep the quality up. I feel like the quality on some of their books has been declining somewhat. And the next link in the show notes, big news from Marvel, a link to an article on Bleeding Cool. Everything You Know About Captain America Is Wrong. In addition to Rebirth coming out May 25th, the Captain America Steve Rogers title from Nick Spencer, who's also the writer on Captain America Sam Wilson, came out. Huge bombshell dropped on the last page of that book. I'm not going to spoil it here, but Marvel almost let the cat out of the bag themselves. Specifically on late Sunday evening, there was talk that Marvel was going to have a big announcement the following day, Monday. And again, I think this was kind of a knee-jerk reaction to all the press that DC was getting. And Marvel's like, where's our press? You know, we're about to do something that's groundbreaking and it's going to change the status quo of one of our most beloved and long-lasting characters. And we're getting, you know, no attention paid to us. But I think after sleeping on it, they decided not to spoil it. And so I went to the comic shop last night, midnight release, and picked up Captain America, Steve Rogers. I wasn't necessarily planning on trying it out, actually. But news of this bombshell kind of had me curious. So I picked it up, I turned to the last page, and I was like, what the heck? Was very surprised, kind of flipped through the book, decided to buy it so I could sit down and read it myself. Don't know that I necessarily like what they're doing. But I mean, at the end of the day, it's a comic book. So, you know, the next writer could come along and just change everything all over again. But I am interested in seeing where it goes. I do like Nick Spencer as a writer. I haven't been reading Captain America Sam Wilson just because again, you know, with Marvel, it seems like they're throwing a bunch of things at the wall just to see what sticks. You know, I've said that many times. It's kind of gimmicky things, you know, having a female Thor, having a person of color as Captain America. Just, you know, I'm a traditionalist. I grew up reading Steve Rogers as Captain America. That's the Captain America I would like to read. And Marvel's just, they're putting out so many titles right now. I feel like it's kind of hard to follow. I've fallen so far behind, you know, on my Marvel reading. It would take a massive undertaking to get caught up. I guess you could say the same for DC, in all fairness. But the fact that, you know, I was kind of keeping up with what was going on with DC. And then with the new 52 relaunch, I was able to, you know, get in on the ground floor of that and kept up with that. And then as I was keeping up with that, it was kind of easy. And I could kind of get the gist of things that had gone on before. And so I'm, you know, much more caught up to modern times with what's going on in DC. So I almost felt like maybe I was going to do that with this all new, all different Marvel. But the fact that the kind of the changed universe started and they, you know, they didn't change. It wasn't necessarily a fresh reboot. But the Civil War, Secret Wars wasn't even over when that started. It just kind of left a bad taste in my mouth, and I didn't really jump on. I have been reading Invincible Iron Man. I have been reading Moon Knight, even though it's only a couple issues in. Actually, I think just one issue has come out so far. Vision, Totally Awesome Hulk. So I'm not devoid on Marvel, but I would like to be caught up on Avengers and understand everything that's going on there, but there's just so many titles. And I should mention Daredevil as well, Charles Soule. But yeah, the Avengers, it's so convoluted at this point, and there's so many different volumes, I feel like I wouldn't even know where to start. I'm sure someday I'll get caught up, but with my limited time right now, it's just not a focus. So, I don't know. I guess we'll see if these new titles in autumn, if it's a little more of a clean slate, a starting point. I do find it very interesting that, you know, we talked about the movies earlier, and a lot of the movie news was Thor and Black Panther and Captain America passing $1 billion worldwide and Spider-Man Homecoming and X-Men Apocalypse. It's other than, you know, Geoff Johns having this new role overseeing the DC Cinematic Universe, there haven't really been a lot of DC movie news items that have been worth mentioning. Maybe that's because they don't have another movie coming out until Suicide Squad, and at this point it's like we kind of have seen everything we need to see for Suicide Squad. It's just a matter of waiting until it comes out. But on the Marvel side of things, it's like, man, there's constantly news coming out. Constantly people are excited. They're talking about the Marvel movies. And on the flip side of that, on the comic side of things, as I was saying, you know, Marvel's upset. They're not getting enough press, enough media attention for the comics. Whereas DC's all over the comics with the Rebirth, with, you know, Wonder Woman's changes, with the last days of Superman, with Batman going on, the Wonder Woman creative team being excited, and they've been everywhere giving interviews. I mean, their passion is so evident. It's very interesting to me. It seems like the focus of DC is still on the books more so than Marvel, whereas Marvel's focus is more on the movie side of things. And, you know, maybe rightfully so. They make a heck of a lot more money on their movies than they do on the comics. But I do think it's a mistake and to focus too much on the movies to the detriment of the comics, because that's where you need the new ideas to come from. So again, I just find it interesting the way all the comic news is going down. And maybe it's just a matter of, you know, this is a big change for DC, admitting they were wrong with the New 52, making these changes to try to bring back what was special about the DC universe, that sense of history, that sense of legacy. And, you know, as much as it pains me to say, their movies haven't been the greatest. So perhaps this change in the source material, getting back to that legacy feel, and Geoff Johns having his hand overseeing all aspects, TV, movie, and the print, and since he has such a sense of that history and legacy, maybe we will see the DC Cinematic Universe kind of lighten up, take a different tone, one that can connect with audiences a little more. So maybe in 6 months or a year, we will be seeing just as much excitement for DC movies as we do for Marvel movies. Likewise, I hope Marvel doesn't neglect their comics too much. And it's not to say they're not putting out some quality books, and their creators are working incredibly hard. You know, Dan Slott, Mark Brooks, Nick Spencer, these are great names that put out really quality books. But I just feel personally that since Joe Quesada moved on as from his editor-in-chief position to take more of a role as kind of overseer of all things Marvel, that the focus on quality stories hasn't been there. It's been more quantity over quality for Marvel. But their sales numbers are so great. So many people go out and buy these books. It's like, from that standpoint, it seems successful. So why change? You know, it seems like most of the complaints I hear about Marvel are from more longtime fans. So, you know, I hope that they kind of dial it back, just because I think in the long run it would be better for Marvel, and what's good for Marvel is also good for the comic industry. You know, what's good for the big two is good for the comic industry, because oftentimes the big two are people's gateways into picking up comics and reading comics, and then they branch out to a lot of the quality independent stuff that's out there. So, yeah, I just find it interesting, the dichotomy between the two. Marvel seems to dominate the movie news cycle, whereas right now DC seems to be dominating the comic news cycle. One final thing I want to mention, and we'll be talking more about this in the future. Comixology, the digital app, digital way to read comics on an iPad or some other kind of tablet on your computer, on your phone, they've finally come out with an unlimited option. It's called Comixology Unlimited, and it's, for lack of a better term, an all-you-can-eat service. It doesn't have any Marvel or DC books. Now, we know Marvel has its own unlimited app where you can go and read books. Now, typically, the Marvel books that are on there are 6 months old or older, kind of a way not to cannibalize the print and the local comic shops that have supported these companies for a long time. You know, who, if you could pay $5.99 or $9.99 a month to read any Marvel comic you wanted, why would you ever go to the comic shop, you know? So they usually wait about 6 months, and then things go up on the Marvel Unlimited app. Well, Comixology has started a similar service. It's being likened to Netflix, being that, you know, when you go to, you pay your monthly Netflix fee, you go there and you can watch what's on Netflix, but not everything is there. You know, when Netflix was the only game in town, and they first started their streaming service, branching out from their sending DVDs through the mail, there was a lot. It was kind of like the only game in town, like I said. So there was a lot more stuff on there. And then as other streaming applications and other streaming programs came around and companies decided to start doing it for themselves, then we saw a lot of the media being split up. So now some things are on, you know, shows you can only find on Amazon Prime. Some shows you can only find on Hulu. Some shows you can only find on Netflix. And so Netflix doesn't have the amount of movies and shows that it used to have. Kind of the same way with the Comixology. They say it's Comixology Unlimited, being that you can, you know, read as many as you want for this one price, but it's really not unlimited. It's not like every Dark Horse book is on there, every Image book is on there, every IDW book is on there, every Boom book. Like, there's certain books are on there, and those will change over time. So, for instance, Walking Dead is on there right now. That doesn't mean Walking Dead is still going to be there in 6 months. It's going to be, you know, they're going to be rotating things and feeling things out. There's been some backlash about this from creators, specifically from creators of creator-owned books, because apparently Comixology worked out deals with the publishers, but not necessarily the creators themselves. And I do worry that at this low price, that creators are not going to be fairly compensated. You know, in this age of digital piracy and such, it's really hard when you pour your heart and soul into something, work really hard, and you don't get compensated for it because people are stealing it. It's just, it's not cool. We saw it happen in the music industry. We see it happening in the movie and film industry. So I worry about that. Specifically, some creators came out when this got announced yesterday, and we're pretty upset, saying they'd never been contacted, but their work is on there. Other creators were saying they didn't think it was a good idea. Dan Juergens specifically, I believe his statement on Twitter was something along the lines of, until a creator can go into a Target and buy everything he needs for $5.99, then giving unlimited comics for $5.99 is not a good idea. Obviously what he means by that is, you know, comic creators need to be able to go and buy food and toilet paper and clothes and, you know, everything you need to, like, live. And if your work is being given away for pennies because it's an unlimited model, then that's not a good thing. On the flip side of it, to look at it as a positive, anything that gets more people reading comics is a good thing, I think. I think that there are people that read digital comics exclusively. But the thing is, if this can hook people in and turn them into comic readers, maybe it can get them into comic shops reading the physical books. Maybe it can get them interested enough to buy the new digital releases every Wednesday as they're coming out. You know, that's what we hope, to grow the readership. Comic readership as a whole has been skewing older and older, as those of us who grew up reading the print comics are just getting older. And there's such a competition these days for the entertainment dollar of the youth of the world, really, that it makes it much harder. You know, you can pay 99 cents and buy a game on your phone, an app on your phone, and get hours and hours of entertainment. So are you really going to spend $3 or $4 on a comic that, you know, you can be done reading in 10 minutes? So, you know, it's a problem for the industry. It's one that has been around for a while and doesn't necessarily have an easy solution. So I guess we'll see where it goes from here. Like I said, we'll be talking more about the unlimited Comixology and digital comics in the future with some special guests that we're going to have on the show. One last thing I'll talk about is just the nature, getting back to the DC Rebirth being spoiled for a lot of people. Just the nature of the world we live in now with social media and instant access to information. You know, the way it got spoiled was DC had sent out advanced copies to some websites so that they could have their reviews and thoughts, and maybe even put up some preview stuff ahead of time. And an anonymous user on Reddit posted some pictures of his advanced copy, gave away some details of the plot. And so, you know, when I was growing up, that would not have been possible. If someone had gotten, you know, if DC had mailed out or shipped out some advanced copies because they wanted some reviews ready to roll out Wednesday morning, you know, whatever. Back then, there was no internet. There was no way to get that information out quickly to such a widespread audience. You know, DC, back then, they would have sent out the advanced copies. You probably would have seen, like, let's say, for instance, like Wizard or Comics Feature Magazine would have had their article about DC Rebirth come out on the same day. They would have put out an issue of Wizard or an issue of Comics Feature that same day that Rebirth came out, and it would have contained an article that talked about DC Rebirth. You know, hey, spoilers, make sure you read DC Rebirth first. But that would have been the only way. And again, it's not going to be widespread. Not everybody picked up those magazines. And it wouldn't have been out days before. But the way the world works now with this, you know, advent of social media, the internet, everybody being connected, it makes it so much easier to get information out there, to spoil things. And so I don't necessarily think that's a good thing. You know, I admit that once I saw that the details were out, I went and read what the details were. You know, I feel like as a person who covers the industry of comics that I need to keep myself up to date with what's going on with the news, what, you know, keep my finger on the pulse of the industry. And so, I mean, I could have waited and not had it spoiled for me, but, you know, that was my choice. And, you know, I don't begrudge anyone who says, no, I don't want anything spoiled for me, or anyone who says, no, that's fine, I'd like to know the details early. You lose out on something, though. You know, it would have been nice to sit down. It would have been nice had none of the details been released and to have sat down last night after I picked up my copy and read it and got that sense of, holy cow, look what they're doing, and been surprised by it. And again, I'm not necessarily complaining because I chose to read those spoilers, but it just would be nice if we could turn back the clock sometimes. Now, that being said, there's plenty of positives about the internet and social media. It gives us greater access to creators and interaction for them with their fans, more so than ever before. I certainly wouldn't be able to set up interviews and meet creators at shows as easily as I do without the connections I make with them on social media. So I guess it's kind of a catch-22. But like I said, it would have been nice had it not leaked. And once it did leak, you know, at that point, the cat was out of the bag, and then DC was like, okay, we're lifting the embargo. If you want to talk about it, go ahead and talk about it. I mean, because at that point, you might as well take advantage of the attention and the press it's getting, right? That whole saying is there's no such thing as bad publicity. So we'll be talking, as I said, more in depth about DC Rebirth specific details in our next episode, and hopefully we'll have some guests on to give their thoughts as well. So that's going to do it for this episode of The Comic Source. Once again, I'd like to thank everyone for joining us. Please visit us at thecomicsourceblog.com for past episodes of the podcast. You can watch episodes of our YouTube channel there as well. You can find Manny's written blog there, my written blog, and of course, there's our sketch gallery. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource, and you can also do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram. That's us. Just search for Comic Source. You'll find us pretty easily. And by following us on all these social media websites, you can really keep up to date on when new episodes are coming out and convention coverage, who's going to be guests on our show, what interviews we have coming up, and all that stuff. So once again, we thank everybody for tuning in and for giving us your support by following us on all those social media sites. And we'll talk to you next time. Don't forget, Phoenix Comic Con coming up the first week of June in Phoenix, Arizona. Hope to see you there. Take care, guys.